Hello and welcome to Comedy in a Nutshell, the podcast wherein I talk to the people who've made comedy their home and find out everything it means to them, whether it's how they got their start, the highs and lows, the lessons they've learned, or how they would sum up all of their knowledge and experience were they to compress it into the hard, woody outer casing of the seed of a tree. You can find out more about my journey in comedy fandom on my website, thecomedynerd.com. I love talking to the people in comedy about comedy. If you like to hear what they have to say as much as I do, then please like, subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast. Thank you. My guest this episode hails from the north of England and has made her home on the south coast. She's an action voiceover artist who you may have heard voicing Annabelle Price in the Doctor Who audio adventure Dread of Night. And she's a stand-up comedian who you may have seen taking runner-up at the 2022 Hastings New Comedian of the Year, comedian Elaine Fellows. If you've got everything you need and you're happy, we'll dive in.
Yeah, I think I'm ready.
So how did you first experience comedy? How did it sort of enter your life?
I would say TV mostly. Like, my family are big on like British sitcoms. I remember watching like all the classics, like Vicar Dibley and Royal Family and Dinner Ladies. Like, it was pretty much what was on all of the time. In fact, still to this day, my parents every Christmas will quote the Royal Family Christmas episode where they're like, "It's not about the golden egg cup," like every year. So yeah, I didn't really go and watch much actual like live stand-up growing up. Even as a teenager, I saw like Peter Kay a few times because my parents live, like, he's like an icon. He's like the head of Lancashire, so that's where my parents live. So it's like basically a rule, you have to go watch him. And he was great. And I think maybe I saw John Bishop a few times. But other than that, yeah, most of my comedy came from like watching it on the telly. And I think the thing in most of those is that they all have really strong female characters. So yeah, it kind of never occurred to me it's only occurred to me later that maybe that like people don't expect women to do that. Because yeah, I get all of the ones I loved, the funniest characters were the women, or it was written by the women, or both.
Yeah.
So I think that's like the my main beginning into comedy.
Did that inspire you then, these sort of strong female roles, to be a comedian yourself or to be an actor?
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think it did at the time, but in hindsight, I think, yeah. And also the fact that, again, I'm really lucky, like my parents are very encouraging, like always been very supportive. So I didn't want to be a comedian until I was, I mean, when did I start? 2019. It was very late that I thought that I could do that. But I wanted to be an actor from when I was like, I don't know, seven, like really just obsessed with it. Spent every weekend going to drama club and like, yeah, it was just a complete nerd about it. And I was never discouraged. I was only encouraged. So yeah, I think the combination of having a very strong, like, female role model in my mum, who was really like, yeah, you can do this. You just really have to work hard. Like, her rule was always, you can do whatever you want, but just do it well, work hard.
Yeah.
So I think that, and then, yeah, just seeing everybody in my family laugh at the same things and find joy together. And I just knew that I don't know if I knew it at the time, but in hindsight, I think that's something I really want. I love the bringing people together and like families and friends just bonding for half an hour over this silly thing in front of them. Yeah. And I quite like being the silly thing in front of them.
So starting as an actor, you studied acting, presumably.
Yeah, I went to drama school. So I grew up in like Southport, Preston, and then moved to London when I was 19 to go to drama school and did that for 3 years. And it was great. It was like the best and worst 3 years ever, because it's like, I loved that I didn't have to do any of the subjects, but it is like all consuming. You just sort of don't do anything else. And then, yeah, I'd still do some acting. Like I still do bits and bobs here and there, but I sort of fell into the comedy when the acting wasn't going so well, and realized that actually all the stuff that I liked about acting is kind of more immediate. It's in comedy. So I still love both, but yeah. So yeah, started out in acting, And now sort of dabble in both, I guess.
Yeah. So what was it that made you think comedy, this is for me? What from a serious dramatic actor into a clown?
Well, I think the problem was that I was never quite a serious dramatic actor, but I thought I was, and no one else agreed. Because I wrote, so one of the things you could do in drama school in your third year, you could write like a 15-minute solo show as part of your degree, because it was a by the time I went, it had all become an actual BA and stuff. So you had to earn a certain amount of points and all of that. So right. One of the ways to earn points was to write a solo show, which I was like, yeah, I'll do that. Sure, I talk a lot. Why not? And I wrote it about, my biological dad passed away when I was a kid. And I wanted to write a sort of a story about the opposite path to my life. So, yeah, my mum really helped me, like, guide me in my life, and I've been adopted by my now dad, and I've got like three siblings, and it all worked out really beautifully for me. But I wanted to sort of write a what if the path had gone the other way sort of show,
right?
About somebody who, you know, was just lost and had never sort of got over this big event in their life, but the key part is that they can't remember that event, because I was only 18 months old. So it's like this massive life event that you have no recollection of, but it does kind of shape a lot of your life. Yeah. So in my head, this was a very serious 15 minutes. But when I wrote it and did it, I was shocked and annoyed, to be honest, that for like 10 minutes of it, people were laughing. So, and I fought against it for a really, that was like sort of 2015. And it was only 15 minutes, and I just kept writing it until eventually it was about 50 minutes. And I took it to Edinburgh again as an actor, like not at all a stand-up show. It was a very serious one woman monologue.
Yeah.
But it just kept not being very serious. And I kept working with, like, I had a really great director for it called Grace. And I kept like working with her on rewriting it and trying to make it sort of more serious, and she kept being like, no, you should lean into this sort of like there's comedy and tragedy vibe to it. And I just really fought against it for some reason. So I went to Edinburgh with it in 2018, and then my partner, he saw it, and he sort of gently suggested, like, what if you tried stand-up? And I was like, you're insane, absolutely I can't write jokes, like, I'm not a comedian, there's no way. And he must have, I think he floated the idea for a good like 6 to 7 months. And it just so happened that his sister knew a woman who was teaching a comedy course. And right. We somehow, drunk at Christmas, they convinced me it would be a great idea to sign up for this comedy course. And so, at the beginning of 2019, I did Beth Weiss's sort of comedy course at Camden Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And that's from then it just sort of spiraled. I guess I didn't stop after that, after really pushing against it for a long time.
Yeah.
I caught the comedy bug.
That's fascinating, because I hear a lot of comedians talk about how they came into it by accident, or they were strong-armed into it. I've never heard of anyone actively resisting doing comedy.
I don't know why. I didn't even not like comedy. I think I just had in my head that, because I loved Shakespeare as a kid. So in my brain, I was like, no, but I'm going to be this globe serious sort of Olivier actor. And I don't know why in my head you couldn't be both. Like now I think you could be both. Of course you could. But yeah. For some reason.
Shakespeare wrote comedies.
Yeah. But for some reason in my head, I thought, no, I've got to stick to this, this very serious path.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm really glad that people convinced me otherwise.
Well, it sounds like from that one woman monologue, it sounds like you were naturally funny anyway. So it's about embracing your natural talent, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know how many many comedians say this. I don't think I think I'm more funny now, but I wouldn't have described myself as a funny person at all. I kind of always thought I was one of those people that funny things happened to. So maybe you would laugh at the stuff that happened. But yeah, I wouldn't have said that I was a particularly funny person. But hopefully I'm wrong, because it seems to be going all right so far.
So starting out in comedy, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and then lockdown slams the door shut. How did that affect your burgeoning comedy career? What did you do during lockdown, and how did you come out of it and reboot?
Well, I'd like managed just about a solid year because I started in April 2019.
Yes.
So almost a year. So I don't really know what, I guess it did stop the growth in terms of like after a year, you sort of have worked out a bit of what's going on for you. But I wasn't so deep in it that it felt like my arm had been cut off. Do you know, like it wasn't so in me yet. Although I did lose all work because I do voiceover and I do like acting role play and stuff. So I had nothing to do in lockdown, which for the first 3 weeks was nice. And then after that, it just, God, you really run out of cross stitch and Netflix, you know? So by the end, I would have done a gig anywhere and did actually. When we came out of lockdown, there were some odd gigs to be doing, like car parks and warehouses and people's gardens. But I would have done, definitely by the end, I would have done it anywhere, anytime, any place, just to get doing something. I tried a couple of Zoom gigs, but again, because I had only done a year, I was still only open mic level. So there's nothing wrong with open mics, but online open mics are really difficult. because what works about an open mic is that a lot of the time the room is full of people's friends or, it's a very kind environment because it is a lot of new people. Whereas when it's on Zoom, most people are too worried to put their camera on or too worried to put their sound on, or they don't know how to turn their sound off and you hear everything in their house and no one's like experienced enough to really deal with it. And so I just found it very stressful. Mm. And I, did two and then decided that was enough for me. I would love to say that I wrote loads of material in lockdown, but even that I started to, what am I writing? There was nothing to write about. I felt like I had no life, no joy, no nothing. it feels like a different life ago now. I don't know about you, but it feels ages ago.
It does.
Somehow.
Well, I'm a lot older than you, so to me it seems like 20 years ago.
No, I think it does seem like 20 years ago. I can't. And if you asked me to do it again now, I don't know if I could. Like now, I mean, again, I was super, I didn't even have it bad. Like I did get some size payments and my partner did too. And we had a flat, like we were fine. And by all accounts, we could eat. We got COVID like once, but it didn't hit us too bad. So I'm really grateful for all of that.
Yeah.
But even the base level of like everything being fine was still difficult. So I can't imagine how bad it must have been to be not fine and have, horrible things and then not be able to do the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
Touch wood, we never do that again.
Yeah. So actor, playwright, voiceover artist, what do you put on the box on the form for occupation? Do you call yourself a comedian?
No, I'm quite wanky. I say performer. Because what do you put? I don't know. Playwright's very exciting. I would never have described myself as that. Thank you, Mark. That sounds very real. I like that. Just toss my hair. I always put performer because... I've got a friend that puts storyteller, which I quite like, but I'm not confident enough to put that. I kind of like to do a bit of whatever's offered, really. It's nice to keep it. I think they all feed each other. Having gone from like, okay, it has to be one, have to focus on one thing, I now think that everything feeds each other, actually. Like the more of each bit you do, the more you can feed into the other thing. Often, like, I'll think of really good, what I think are really good comedy jokes while I'm doing like, voiceover or acting or something. I guess it's because like the back of my brain is, it's less stress, so it can think of something good. Whereas if I sit and I try and write, it's like, I've got nothing, I can't do this. So,
are you one of those people who rummages around for scraps of paper, so, to write material down on the bus because you've just thought of a great idea?
Yeah. Or like I've got a huge note on my phone. In fact, I've filled like three now where it just says jokes. And then I read some of them back and I'm like, what is that? I don't need to stop writing in a code that I don't understand.
So becoming a comedian then, for the first time, you got your first gig. What was that gig and how did it go?
Well, I guess my first one would have been at the end of Beth Weiss's comedy course, which wasn't for beginners, by the way, which I only realised on my first day when every other person there was, I think actually maybe just me and one other guy were both actors who were going to give it a go, but everyone else was already a really very good comedian, which was terrifying, but actually also great because really, when you're the bottom of the pack, you have no choice but to one, learn, and two, try to get further up the pack. And Beth was just great, like not at all discouraging. In fact, the absolute opposite. Like, of course you can do this. There's no reason that you can't do this.
Yeah.
Really good theme, actually, I've just realised, of women telling me I definitely can do this. How lucky. So yeah, at the end of that sort of, I think it was 10 weeks, I can't remember if it was 8 or 10, but we did a sort of showcase, but just to sort of friends and family. And that was actually 10 minutes. So my first ever gig, very backwards, was 10 minutes, which at the time seemed like it was going to be impossible. But I had a really good time, obviously. Like, it was friends and family. It was really, really great. And then I had to go and do an open mic, which was 5 minutes. And I found that way more difficult because you think you're going to have nothing to say. But actually, my problem in the beginning was that I had too many words and not enough jokes. So I always think that maybe I can't count that nice first 10 minutes as my first gig because it seems almost like in isolation, like you could pick it up and put it anywhere. Yeah. And really, that first 5 minutes at Comedy Virgins might be more realistic of the first attempt at comedy.
Yeah. So you take the training wheels off then, you go to Cavendish Arms. Mm-hmm. So that's your first non-friendly environment, let's say. So, I mean, you're saying like that's the big test. So how was it stepping out onto that stage for the first time? Do you get nerves and anxiety? Do you still?
Oh, I mean, definitely got nerves and anxiety. I think I didn't sleep for about 2 days before. It was, and to be honest, if it wasn't for the fact that I had already, you had to bring somebody because it's one of those classic bringers, which a lot of people don't like, but in the beginning, they are very helpful. And I'd already asked my partner, Daniel, to come. So he was already set that this was happening. And I think if it weren't for the fact that he was like, we're doing this, I may have chickened out. So yeah, really, probably some of the worst stage fright I've ever felt. Because I don't know if I really got it much as an actor. I guess because doing it from really young, you sort of, you're just constantly doing it. You're always, there are times that are more nerve-wracking than others, but you just sort of believe you can do it because you've done it 1,000 times. Mm. But with this, I didn't really believe I could do it at all. So, but once I got on, it kind of evaporates. Mm. And I still find that now, like there will be some situations I'm really nervous, but most of the time it will kind of evaporate when you start. There are definite times that it doesn't and it's a horrible, terrible time, but more often than not, I find that, I don't know, it's kind of like a cloud comes over and you can sort of hyper-focus into what's happening.
Yeah. Was it everything that you anticipated it would be, being a comedian?
Oh, I don't know if I anticipate, because sometimes I feel a bit of a fraud, because I do meet some comics who live and breathe and have always known that they want to be a comedian. In a similar way to that, I feel like maybe I came across as an actor. I've definitely still met actors who were even more into it than me, but just sort of, it's been a constant in your life. Whereas I feel like I came to comedy quite late in terms of thinking about it seriously.
Right.
So I don't know if I had much anticipation of what it would be like, because I hadn't really considered it. Even when I started doing open mics, in my brain I was like, well, I think I set 50 gigs, and then when I got to 50 I was like, I'll do 100, just to say I did it, and then I'll probably stop. And then it's the classic, you get to 100 and you think, oh, I'll do a few more, and then it starts to sort of roll to the point where now you've got gigs booked quite far in advance. It's not very fair to pull out on those, so you just keep going. So yeah, I'm not sure that I knew what to anticipate. It's been both great and sometimes disheartening in equal measure, I think. But I kind of feel like most things that are worth doing can be very difficult. So
yeah,
I'll take the good with the bad most of the time.
You said you caught the bug. So what was it about performing stand-up that caught you?
Oh, well, I mean, there's no feeling like making a whole room laugh, for sure. There's also no feeling like making a whole room not laugh. That is part of the problem. You really, like, it doesn't happen too much nowadays, but in the beginning, God, that can really hurt. But definitely, again, going back to that feeling of like bringing people together, especially when the world outside is so horrid sometimes. Mm. I mean, lots of the times. And like people are really going through it at the minute in like varying degrees. And the thing I used to like about acting is that you have to sit down. I'm sort of specifically theatre. I guess you do get it in cinema if you go to the actual cinema and watch a film. But like you have to go into a room and your phones are away and you just don't know what's happening outside for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And we don't really do that very much anymore. We don't really switch off too often because we can't. Like we're all connected all of the time. And in some ways that's great. And in some ways it's terrible. But yeah, so it took the bit that I like about acting in theatre. And it made it like even more immediate because in the theatre, like it's very much you watch it and at the end you get a clap and you don't really know whether people loved it or hated it until they tell you or there's a review or you hear them talking as they go to their car. But in comedy, you very much know there and then what somebody thinks about it. And for some people, that would be awful. But for me, I think I'm an impatient person and I really like knowing... Oh, okay, that you liked. Why? Why did you like that? And then, oh, you didn't like that. Why didn't you like that? And it just is, it really like gets all the good bits of my brain firing, I think.
In that sense, are you kind of rewriting as you go? Is part of your mind performing the next joke and part of you is kind of thinking, oh, I need to change that?
I think sometimes I'm getting better at that. I still think in comedy life, I'm very much a young child. Like I've not really been going that long. So my brain's not always quick enough to be able to do it in the moment. Like if something's really not working, sometimes I'm just more fixated on the fact like it's not working, but I can't in the moment work out why. And I'll have to go back over it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, there will be times where you'll sort of notice a shift and, sort of try and fix it or work out why in the moment on stage. I think I'm definitely getting better at working out. One thing I used to find really impressive when I first started is if you'd see a comedian that you've seen a few times and they would do their set, but they would like tailor it to the audience. So they would know, that audience probably isn't going to like that joke, or they might prefer it if I started with this, or I might cut this. And I'd think, how do you know that? And how do you know your stuff well enough to be able to interchange and move it around? And now I can do that. And I feel such, what's the word? Pride when I do it. I'm like, oh God, I moved that joke around. I'm so clever.
What about the person you are on stage? Is it Elaine, the actor playing a character? Or do you just walk out and talk and then walk off again? How much of it is you and how much is it someone else that you're playing?
Oh, I think it's mostly me. I think it's me with a bit of sparkle, you know? it's like me, but jazz hands. So I'm not playing a character. And especially if I'm like emceeing or something like that, or it's like a show where it's just me, or like a split bill or something, and you've got more time to show your character, or you've got to respond live in the moment. Mm. That's definitely me, because I'm not good enough to be somebody else in those moments. But I think that sort of my 10 and my 20 sets are crafted in a way that it is me, but it's sort of the awkwardness is ramped up and the embarrassment is ramped up and the northernness is ramped up. It's all just a bit more stage friendly.
You said about you get in immediacy, the reaction in the room. How about like feedback and criticism? Do you respond well to heckles, reviews, that sort of thing?
Do I respond well?
Oh. I can rephrase. How do you respond?
No.
Be it well, or do you get angry? Do you Hulk out?
Do I Hulk out? I don't think I ever have Hulked out. I don't think, no. Heckles, I don't get too many. I can like count on my hand the amount of like truly horrible they just heckles, where they actually want you to be upset. Most of my heckles tend to be like people wanting to just be involved. Like, yeah. they want to tell me something that's happened to them that's similar, or they want to agree with something I'm saying, or they want to add on to the joke. So they're not really things to get angry at. They're sort of more things to either try and get to stop as soon as possible, or play with if you've got time and make happen.
Yeah.
But the times that I've had actual mean heckles, I don't think I've done much about them at all, because I'm jinxing myself now. It hasn't happened for a little while. So it was kind of when I first started like coming out of open mic and going into sort of actual venues, but maybe not full-time comedy clubs. And sometimes you are thrown into situations that you're definitely not ready for. Like, you've just applied for a spot and they've given you it and you've maybe embellished whether you could be there. And so I think I probably wasn't ready to respond to something like that. And a lot of the time, the bad ones are kind of, they've always been that it is unfortunately like a group of men and they don't want to see a female comic. And you can't sometimes change that. That's something that's, they've already decided that before you've gone on. So, I mean, I could spend 12 minutes trying to explain to them why that's not a helpful like thing to carry around, or I could just try and plow through and take the £40 petrol money and go home. And I think I often choose that option, but I mean, maybe I'll change as I get deeper into comedy. I see some people handle bad heckles amazingly, and I think maybe one day I'll be able to do that.
What about reviews? You said about as an actor, you don't know what the response is until you, for example, read reviews. What about reviews for acting work or for comedy itself?
Someone told me really early on, never Google yourself. So I don't do that. I try in acting, like you can sort of get away with not reading reviews too much because you don't need them in the same way that you do in comedy. Like in comedy, you have to, I guess you need quotes to apply for spots and you need them for your poster and to sell things. So you're way more, you're your manager as well as your comic, unless you have a big agent, but even then I think you still have to take control of your own career a lot. Whereas in acting it's very much a separate thing. Like, you do the acting and then everything else is left to somebody else, unless you're putting on your own show. So in acting I just didn't really read reviews unless I absolutely had to, or unless they were really good and my mum sent them to me, which is definite bias, I'm sure. In comedy, I guess I haven't been reviewed too much. I've only really been reviewed like at when they review sort of the finals of new act competitions, or I've had a split bill reviewed a couple of times. So I've been lucky that I haven't had to handle like someone really hating or trashing me, because it's not the environment where I'm in sort of inviting that kind of opinion, that they're coming to watch knowing that you're either quite early on in your journey or the show itself is quite early on. So they're kind of looking at it with quite kind eyes. So I just try not to take anything too, even the good stuff, try not to take it too seriously. And remember that like it is one person's opinion, and that one person unfortunately matters sometimes more, but you can't please everyone all of the time. But I mean, yeah, definitely sometimes you'll read something and be like, oh, that hurt. I'm going to go and eat some ice cream and feel sad about that for a night.
You said about competitions there. How do you feel about competitions in general? There's the answer.
I don't know how I feel about them. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that they're a necessary evil, but I don't know actually if I believe that, because I don't know if they're necessary and I don't think they're evil. I think they're a helpful stepping tool for people, for sure. But they also can be nothing. I've seen people win stuff and then nothing's happened. I've seen people like not even place and then they've done great. I think they can be really fun and they can not be. But that's like any gig, I think. So I've had a really good time at the ones I've done. Mm-hmm. But I know some people have had a horrible time at the ones I've done. So I don't know. They can... I guess because I'm someone who gets up and I do tell stories. So I'm more like traditional stand up, and I think people expect that, and so they're more on board. And I think maybe sometimes competitions can be not very fair on people that do something a bit more alternative.
Yeah.
And they're not always set up for that. Although, actually, I eat my words, because BBC was just won by Frankie, and he's so funny. So. And completely alternative and crazy, and I love that. So I think it's actually moving more that way. Mm-hmm. And Viggo won Britain's Got Talent. So mm-hmm. actually, maybe I retake everything I just said. yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them. I've had ups and downs at them, I think. Similar to reviews, you can't take it too seriously. Mm. That didn't really answer the question, did it? Sorry.
You refer to yourself as a storyteller. Obviously, if you're doing spots, you're doing fives, you're doing tens, you don't have room to spin a yarn kind of thing. So
yeah.
So you've got your new show coming up, mm-hmm. Sugar and Lies.
Yep.
So are you now more comfortable with having the room to flex your storytelling, or do you enjoy as much or more being like an MC where you're in control of the room, or those spots doing shorter gags?
I like all three, but I think I've only started emceeing sort of in the last year or so, and I really love it because I think it is such an opportunity to just be in the room, which if I'm comparing to acting, it's like you have to be in the room in a very different way. Like in acting, you're definitely going to say the same thing every time unless something goes really wrong. So for me, emceeing seems like the absolute antithesis to that. And so therefore it's like maybe the biggest challenge against what I've always learned. And like I like not knowing what's going to happen next. It's both terrifying and really exciting at the same time. So I like the freedom of that. And then I think definitely my sort of style of comedy probably suits a longer, I think you hopefully will like me more the more time you spend with me. I hope. If not, no refunds. That's the rule. So yeah, I'm really enjoying Sugar and Lies. Is just like a work in progress at the moment. And I did it a few times at the end of last year at Women in Comedy Festival and Faversham and Nottingham. And I really like having the space, the sort of 45, 50 minutes to play with it and move things around, and if the audience does say something, you don't have to sort of squash it because there's plenty of time to interact. I think the longer and the more freedom at the moment, I'm more excited by that. Yeah. But that might just be because the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I've been really focused on getting a solid 20 minutes, and that was my main focus, because you kind of need that to begin getting further into comedy. So maybe it's just nice having let go of that for a little bit.
Yeah. So Sugar and Lies, you're working towards an Edinburgh show?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Edinburgh this year, but just do 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Still work in progress for the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope is that this will eventually become my hour debut.
Yeah.
I hope. But I'm also open to the fact that sometimes what you discover is that actually this isn't the story you want to tell. And so, I mean, I might get to the end of this year and be like, well, that was fun. Let's start again. Much to the dismay of my partner, probably, who is probably fed up with me saying, what do you think of this bit? so But yeah, I hopefully that will, or some version of it will eventually become, yeah, an hour debut. That's the aim.
Yeah. But you pointed out that you're not new to Edinburgh. So how is your Fringe experience as a whole?
Oh, it's very different as an actor to a comic. I didn't think it could be so different.
Yeah.
When I went as an actor, I had a director and I had a producer. And it was still like super low budget, but I just knew a lot of people in the sort of acting world. So it was like an easy, accessible sort of world to ask, does anyone want to do this with me?
Yeah.
But then when you get to Edinburgh, you are very much just doing a show and then you're watching shows and that's it. Mm. Whereas in comedy, you're very much either on your own, or I did a split bill with my friend in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was what year it was. Yeah. Time's going so fast.
With Ellie.
Yes. And we had a great time. And so it's very much like you're doing your show, but then you're also doing like any spot that anyone will give you in any random building at any time of day or night. And you are constantly bumping into comedians you know, and then they introduce you to other people, and there's always a party, and there's always karaoke. And and it so it just seems way more full on as a comic. It's like very much a sort of living organism when you're doing comedy. But then again, my acting experience was doing a solo show. I think maybe if you went and you did a full play with a big cast, maybe you have a completely different experience again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found doing comedy at the Fringe 10 times more tiring than doing acting at the Fringe.
Do you watch other shows if you're at a festival, or do you, when you're emceeing, do you watch the other acts or just wait for your turn to come back on?
No, I always try and watch if I can. I'm not so good. Or sometimes I find that you're booked for, I mean, nice problem to have. You're booked for like so much in a week that you can't get to watch other people. But if I'm at a show, because I'm at the point where I'm mostly on in the middle, because I'm sort of at that stage of getting the nice middle open spots, I'll always try and arrive like to see the opener, and always try and stay for the headliner, because I just feel like often they are way further ahead and you can sort of, yeah, you can learn quite a lot from watching them. If I'm at the Fringe, or like I live in Brighton, so when Brighton Fringe is on, it's any excuse to go and watch something. But I always like to try and see something weird. Like I watch a lot of comedy,
yeah,
but I will always try and, or weird's maybe a rude word, I just mean like something that I would not normally see. That, you know, the like Fringes just bring out the most weird combos of things. Like people will do sort of banquet, ballet, clowning, aerial, acrobatic yoga.
I'd watch that.
I would, wouldn't you? It sounds great. I'll always try and go to something like that, or equally, like I still go and watch plays when I can, or spoken word, or anything that, basically anything. If somebody invites me to something, if I could go, I will go normally, because I just think you never know what you're going to see, and I really like that.
And when you see other comedians, like you said about if you're emceeing, you watch the opener, the closer, do you watch them as a comedian with a comedian's mindset, or are you able to sit back and laugh?
Oh, I definitely laugh. Yeah, I do understand it, but I don't have the problem yet of being a comic that doesn't laugh at stuff. I still find things funny.
Hmm.
I guess maybe, again, I think because comedy for me is kind of later, so I don't feel like I know every joke all of the time yet. So yeah, I definitely can watch things and do laugh a lot. Do I watch it with a comedy brain? I think you can't help but watch it with a comedy brain, though, still. I feel like maybe I'm half and half, or... I'll only notice that I've got the comedy brain on when... If someone's doing a joke and then their punchline is, like, completely out of... Like, I would never have written that. I realise I will be like, oh, my God, how did they get there? Because I would have written X, Y, Z, and that would have been much more obvious. Mm. Or vice versa. Like, if you guess a punchline... You can feel a little bit big-headed about that. Like, no, I knew they were going to say that. So I sort of noticed that my comedy brain will kick in then. But I don't know if I watched the whole... I definitely do laugh, and I definitely do enjoy other people's sets, for sure.
Yeah. What about cultural differences, regional? I mean, as you said, you're raised in the north,
yeah.
Living on the south coast. As you've moved around, do you find your comedy is received differently? Do you find that there are regional cultural differences where some gags work, some gags don't work? You have to mix it up.
Yeah, definitely. There will be like truths that hit harder to home depending on where you are. I mean, I actually feel like in the South, a Northern accent is really popular. I almost, depending on where I am, I mean, sometimes I'll open my mouth and people are like, oh no, oh dear. But the majority of the time, they automatically think you're going to be funny. There's just something about, I don't know, there's just something about it. So it's almost easier. Hmm. But then you go to the North and no one cares that you're Northern because they're all Northern. So it's not helping you at all. So there's that. And then, yeah, then you go to Scotland and they're like, oh, God, English people again. I just did the stand in Edinburgh and Glasgow. And I've got to say, like, Scottish audiences are the best. They're just so up for it all of the time. Yeah. Like, and they themselves are so funny. Like, sometimes they are funnier than me. And I think, God, I really got up my game for this. The audience are beating me here. but there definitely is. I think everyone has a sort of regional joke. So like it does help to have a joke about an area. If you know something quite well, if you've lived somewhere or you've got family there or whatever, and you know an inside thing, It's just such a quick way to get an audience on your side to be like, I mean, normally it's like, what about that shit all down the road? And they love that.
Do you set yourself targets for like, I want to play this venue, I want to be on a bill with this person, I want to be at this level in a certain amount of time? Do you set those kinds of objectives?
Yeah, I didn't used to. When we first, I think one of the best things that happened to me was when in lockdown, we moved from London to Brighton.
Yeah.
And at first I was kind of worried that I was moving from the hub of comedy to further out and that it was going to mean that I didn't really gig at all. And actually, the opposite happened because, one, it's very helpful. I drive so I can get to obscure places and I can drive other comics. So sometimes you get a spot just because you can drive somebody else, and that's really helpful. But also because the Brighton comedy scene is much smaller, so you meet the same people again and again, and it becomes like a very dysfunctional family. And you will throw each other a bone. And like, if someone asks for someone, you do get recommended more and more. And so, when we came out of lockdown and I started to meet the Brighton comedy circuit and they started to help me like learn about where other bits of comedy were in the country, then I started to think, oh, well, I actually probably could aim to do a bit more than I thought. Mm. And so that's when I started to be like, oh, well, maybe I do want to aim to be like tour support for this person or do an opening at this club or do this many gigs. And so I've only really started doing that since after lockdown.
Right.
Mm. Because I don't think I really knew the possibility. Again, I started doing open mic and thought I'll just do 50 gigs. So
yeah,
I don't think I really knew the possibilities of what you can do and where you can go and how big it can get.
Yeah. What about individuals? You mentioned early on about, you know, some of those strong female characters. Do you have specific inspirations? Are there people now who continue to inspire you?
Yeah, I think not that I'm only talking about female comics, but there are so many unbelievable female comedians on the circuit.
Yeah,
I don't even know if I could name them all because it's just. But I mean, even in Brighton alone, we've got like Maisie Adam, we've got Laura Lex, we've got Zoe Lyons. Like, it's insane here.
Yeah.
And then you keep going up the country, and they just get more and more of them on the list. And I'm opening for Laura Smith at her Brighton tour date in May.
Mm-hmm.
She's unbelievable, and actually, she was at my first gig in Comedy Virgins. So she's like someone that it's been amazing to watch her journey from beginning to now. And she's just so great.
Mm.
I definitely have inspiration from, you know, Victoria Wood and all of that. But I find most of my like inspiration and like gear to go comes from when you go to a gig and you meet these people who are actually doing it every day.
Yeah.
and they're getting better and better, and you see them getting better and better, and you see them getting the recognition they deserve. And that, I think that's the thing that like drives me and inspires me.
Yeah. What about so far some of the key lessons that you've learned? Have you developed any philosophies of your own?
Oh. key lessons I have learned. Well, don't ever only put the postcode in the sat nav. That is like such a key lesson, because it can often be wrong. It will often be wrong. Always put the name of the venue and the postcode. That is a big lesson. I think like don't take. This isn't mine. Someone told it me ages ago, but someone said to me, it might have been at drama school, like, take the work seriously, but not yourself. And I do try and live by that, because at the end of the day, like, comedy is daft. That's the point of it. But it can also be serious, and it can, you know, get messages out, and it can be a real saver for some people. And so you have to sort of take it as both.
Yeah.
And I think the only way to do that is to really take the actual work of doing it seriously, and like give the audience the respect of like, here is your comedy. But at the same time, remember that you are a glorified jester, and this is not brain surgery. No one will die if it goes wrong. And you get to just mess about and play around for a living, which not lots of people get to do. Mm. So just even when it's really not great, which sometimes it can be really not great, trying to hold on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I try and carry around, and the postcodes. Really, really want to, like, that's the one bit of advice I would give.
So on the subject then of it not being so great, what so far has been the worst experience you've had in comedy and the best?
Oh, God. I mean, it isn't nice. It isn't great when you come on and you do, like, I was at a club and there was like a group of 10 guys and they introduced me. I was the only female on the lineup. And as I came on, one of them was just like, oh, it's a girl. And then the rest of them booed. And that doesn't feel great. Mm. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But other than that, God, maybe this isn't a thing to be like grateful for, but God, it can be so much worse for a lot of other people. So maybe that's not a great way to compare it. Like, oh, well, it could be worse, but, and there are some interesting gigs. I've done a gig on a speedboat that doesn't work. apparently, I think the story was, it was in like a back of a, I don't even want to call it a bar. I don't even know what this place was, but it was like a sort of a makeshift beer garden. And in the back was this speedboat that apparently the owner of the bar had won on The Price is Right. Already won it on Bullseye. One of those like old game shows, basically. And he just put it in there, and the mic stand and everything were in the speedboat. Next to a jacuzzi that had the lid on because the night before someone had vomited in it. So I'm going to put that as like a fairly comedy low. So they're probably like some of the not great ones. But then like best, God, I got to open for Colin Holt once in Bath, and that was lovely. It was my first experience of being a tour support for someone. And he was just so nice and so, yeah, welcoming and friendly and great. And the audience were lovely. What are the great moments have I had? I think meeting, it's not too wholesome, meeting like my friends has been nice, like making comedy friends. And I'm getting married in October, and like a bunch of them are coming. And to like sort of made real friendships on this strange thing that you do is a really nice sort of byproduct of the comedy.
So how can listeners find out about you and where they can see you perform?
Instagram is probably your best bet. That's where I'm most active. So I'm at Elaine Fellows on Instagram. Also Brighton on the 4th and 5th of May, I believe. And then Edinburgh. So So if you're in any of those places, I would love for you to come along and you can heckle nice things at me.
And finally, then, how would you, Elaine, sum up comedy in a nutshell?
I would sum comedy up in a nutshell as it is the weirdest but most fun job I could ever ask for. And it is a place where it should be, and I hope it is, accessible to everyone and anyone, and a place where anyone and everyone can find a space to say what they need to say and hear what they need to hear. That's in an ideal world, that's what I would have comedy as.
Elaine, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. It was really fun.